Keep It is brought to you by Beam. Let me tell you something. My sleep is poor, okay? You know, I stay in the club and I stay in the streets. And that doesn't leave time for me to stay in my mattress.
I feel a little unsafe. This is a lot to admit at once, but okay.
Sleep is the foundation of whole body health. When we sleep well, our minds and our bodies perform at their best. Good sleep also increases focus, boosts energy, and improves your mood. And that's why we're so excited to talk about Beam's Dream Powder, a science-backed, healthy, hot cocoa for sleep.
This bedtime essential is so decadent and available in delicious flavors like sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and the Beam Dream Powder Original Flavor Cinnamon Cocoa. Each serving is only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. We can say this with confidence, better sleep has never tasted better. I've done this thing the past week, every single day, and I love sleeping on it. It's so calming. Dream is tested for high-quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest, supporting all four stages of the sleep cycle to help you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. Other sleep aids can cause next-day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed.
Beam me down, Scotty, to sleep.
Is that a reference to a TV show? I simply wouldn't know.
Or a Nicki Minaj mixtape, Lewis.
Oh, God. I'm so not on the level. Or on the streets where you live.
Beam Dream is easy to add to your nighttime routine. Just mix Dream into hot water or milk, froth, and enjoy before bed. So, if you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/keepit and use code KEEPIT at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/keepit and use code KEEPIT for up to 40% off. And we are back for an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III, published author.
And I'm Louis Fertel, a lowly Emmy nominee, out here making television and not literature, like Ira.
My book came out today. I'm excited.
What a crazy feeling. Oh my God, it's been so long coming. I mean, this was announced, this is how books work. This was announced very long ago, and now it's coming out. When did you get around to the first draft? Like a couple weeks ago?
Yeah. Was a really quick rush process, you know, and then they were like, well, we got a week to edit this. Let's make it work.
Yeah, right. It's like Parade magazine. They just like, okay, we'll stamp it together. Go. Yeah.
Not Parade catching a stray.
I would read Marilyn Vosafon and Parade every week, her little IQ brain teasers.
But speaking of the book, I was just in Milwaukee last night, my hometown, where much of the book is set, and I loved being there and like talking about the book and then meeting people who came to see it, who are obviously Keep It listeners. And we were talking about this with Graham Norton, right? You know, the idea that people haven't really read the book yet, so they're just asking you general questions. And mostly the questions are just questions you'd get from people who listen to Keep It. They were just asking me my opinions on pop culture. And of course, someone said, what are your thoughts on Carla Sophia Gascon? And I said, you're going to have to wait till this week's episode, baby.
And you tipped your hat? Yes. Good day, madam. You said, flying off in your copter.
And so here we are.
Here's the thing. I am so grateful for the magnificent Grammys we had. Otherwise, this would be the most enervating topic of all time. I mean, I am here to talk about the Oscars just in general. It doesn't have to be February, it could be middle of August, whatever. It could be 3 a.m. at a club. I'm ready to talk about the Oscars. Carla Sophia Gascon is a new frontier. I truly am like struggling to even begin to discuss this insane issue. Ira and I both remember very vividly a few years ago, the Oscars so white phenomenon, which several actors responded poorly to. I kind of thought that would be as bad as this kind of conversation would get. And now we're in the thick of this controversy where the Best Actress nominee from Emilia Perez, a movie that is universally adored. I don't know if you've, I'm kidding. If you've ever been on the internet, you know that's not the case. Somebody uncovered a number of old tweets from this person. And I'll say this about cancelable tweets. Usually you can hear that they were trying to write a joke or be funny. Not one motherfucking time. This is simply racism. That is it.
She was a keyboard warrior. Yes. Okay.
She stayed at the desktop.
At first, when I heard someone said, Carla Sofia Gascon's tweets were unearthed, you know, they're racist. I was kind of like, are we still doing this shit? Like she should have scrubbed her account, sure, but they can't be that bad. It's probably something stupid that we're, you know, taking to an extreme. And then I saw she was up in the Oscar So White hashtag. She was live tweeting the show. She had opinions on not just that, but also her co-star, who is in Emilia Perez with her, which is the funniest tweet to me, wading into Selena Gomez's alleged feud with Hailey Bieber over Selena Gomez's former relationship with Justin Bieber. She tweets that Selena Gomez is a rich rat.
Okay, let me just say this about the phrase rich rat. You shouldn't be calling people that. But picture a rich rat. It's kind of cute. It's so like the wind funny. In the willows, bitch. He's got a little cane. He's by the water. She also denies that she tweeted that, by the way. She says that she would never say that about Selena Gomez. However, she did say a lot of other things about literally every other human being. So... not really much of an apology. I guess we have to read some of them. Should we read like three of them? I don't know. It goes on and on and on. I'm so sorry that we're going to be reciting these.
Here's just a few of her highlights. New attack in France. Beheadings in Nice by one of these retarded followers of Allah. How many times will we have to expel these madmen from Europe until we realize that their religion is incompatible with Western values? We do not learn. Thank you, Erdogan.
Unbelievable. That's, by the way, one tweet.
Yeah. I have never seen tweets this racist from someone who is running for an Oscar.
No. I mean, like, it's one of those things people are like, oh, should she have her Oscar nomination taken away? And my response to that is, I don't really think it's up to the Academy to be like this person's parent. Like, it's like them awarding somebody for a performance to me has nothing to do with this other thing. Like, guys, like, Mel Gibson still has an Oscar. Kevin Spacey still has his two Oscars. Roman Polanski is still an Oscar winner and nominee, etc. So we would have to start there if we were taking away Oscars, in my opinion.
Also, we're still in the midst of voting for the Oscars, so you could also just not vote for her.
That's true. And I'm just going to kindly suggest that she wasn't going to win anyway. And it's like, you know, there's only five slots in the Best Actress category, and I have to think, sorry, it's getting really warm in here. If I had to pick another person we could have voted for instead, none are really coming to mind. You know, like a complicated kind of gritty
reveal. Lewis with a reveal.
Can you believe I did that? People can't see this at home. It's a podcast. But I just pulled off my jacket and underneath, somebody sent me a lovely shirt with Mary and John Baptiste's name in all block letters, which... thank God they sent this. I guess it was from God. I don't know who sent it, but
mine is across the room.
Oh, good. It would have been weird if we both wore it, but
Her next tweet: Islam is becoming a hotbed of infection for humanity that urgently needs to be cured. I'm sorry, the bitch is just racist.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, it's just blatantly racist. Like, if you had to come up with like a dictionary definition, this would be it.
There's no joke here. There's no, like, ain't no metaphor punchline. She's really sitting in racism.
Yeah, right. The COVID vaccine, the Chinese vaccine, apart from the mandatory chip, comes with two spring rolls. Okay, now it's sort of sounding like Greg Gutfeld comedy. Anyway, a cat that moves its hand, two plastic flowers, a pop-up lantern, racist, three telephone lines, and €1 for your controlled purchase. Should we get into George Floyd for a second? I really think that few people ever cared about George Floyd, a drug addict swindler. Come on. But his death has served to once again demonstrate that there are people who still consider black people to be monkeys. The writing. Without rights and consider policemen to be assassins, they're all wrong. Now, this is interesting to me, too. She was tweeting during the 2021 Oscars. That's the Nomadland one. And she said, more and more, the Oscars are looking like a ceremony for independent and protest films. I don't know if I was watching an Afro-Korean festival, a Black Lives Matter demonstration, or the 8M. Now, let me say this. Dropping Black Lives Matter in this context is already insane. When she says Afro-Korean festival, that was interesting to me because I was like, what are you talking about?
They do love fried chicken.
I'm pretty sure what she means is Daniel Kaluuya won an Oscar for Judas and the Black Messiah, and Yunya Jung won an Oscar for Minari. So what she's actually just saying is she's turning the fact that two non-white actors won Oscars into a reason to complain.
Listen, I just think that she is really into Korean fried chicken.
I must also add about her, unfortunately right now, her name is an amazing punchline. Like I was, somebody invited me to their like pregame for Drag Race over the weekend. I was like, can I bring a friend? It's Carla Sofia Gascon. Can I bring a friend? You know, it's just, it's like you get instantly jolted with electricity.
I would love if someone hosting the Oscars did a song that was the Gaston song from Beauty and the Beast, but about Carla Sofia Gascon.
Oh my God, why can't we get you in the writer's room? Conan, we're right here.
No one tweets like Gascon.
Oh God. Well, it remains to be seen how visible Carla will be in the upcoming awards. I guess she's doing none of the, like the Producers Guild awards are this week. She won't be there. They just announced that she won't.
Oh, they've removed her from everything, honey.
Yeah.
The last thing that these producers want is her to be in the face of reporters.
Yeah, right. Apparently also, I had heard that they were considering doing the Fab Five thing again at the Oscars where they have five winners or old nominees present to the five new nominees. And I feel like you cannot do that now. Like, who is going to present to Carla Sofia Gascon? Actually, there's one answer. It could be Marion Cotillard. French actress. And, you know, something about her is kind of like, what did she say? I've never heard of Twitter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to know if she's going to be booed.
Right. I can't remember anybody being booed at the Oscars. I remember when Elia Kazan won that award, you know, Ed Harris and Amy Madigan didn't stand. But I don't remember any booing, really.
Well, they booed my good sis Little Feather.
Oh, that's true. Yes, Sasheen, who it turned out the only Little Feather she bought was at Bed Bath & Beyond because she wasn't really a Native American or something, we found out when she died.
Yeah, well, you know, Marlon Brando was always up to something.
Yeah, right. Bisexual sex is the answer to that, yes. Yeah, this is just an unbelievable situation. I feel bad for the other actors in this movie. I feel, you know, that they are obligated to say something when clearly a lot of these tweets happen when they didn't even know this person.
Well, to be fair, I already felt bad for all of the actors in the movie.
You were advanced in that way. Yeah,
I saw the movie.
I will say this about Emilia Perez. I thought it was an entertaining enough movie. I don't know that I needed to see it in the Oscars conversation. If all it got were the Zoe nomination, I'd have been fine with it. That said, when you say you kind of enjoyed anything about this movie, people pretend like you put a cat in the microwave. I mean, like, it's a movie. Yeah.
People act like you're Carla Sofia Gascon tweeting.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
She is a great punchline.
Yeah. No, it's just the right amount of syllables. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Anyway, she has said in an interview that she will not withdraw from the race.
Nor do I think she should, really. I just don't think, I don't think this conversation, the Oscars conversation, mm-hmm. is like dovetailing with this conversation about, oh, you said these unbelievably horrible things and now you probably just won't get cast in anything. Like, I think that's the punishment. But, you know, been wrong before. And, you know, those movies with like Candace Cameron Bure probably need an antagonist, and she'll probably get a call.
Now, the tweets were originally posted. Shout out to Sarah Hagee, who I love. She screenshotted them and put them on Twitter. And Carla Sofia Gascon has said that she doesn't recognize many of these tweets and that she has been judged, condemned, sacrificed, crucified, and stoned without a trial and without the option to defend defend myself. Okay, Vicky Gunvalson.
Also, all you're doing is defending yourself.
Yeah, that's
second of
all she's doing. Yes. She drops a new interview every day.
Right. Also, it's like reposting tweets you posted. How is that stoning you or whatever you just said? It's literally just the words out of your mouth. There's no additional commentary needed. I'm shocked at the defensiveness of her tone. I would just be immediately humbled and apologetic if something like that befell me. But she constantly is treating the situation like, if I yell hard enough back at it, it'll go away. I don't understand what she's doing. She just did an unauthorized CNN interview that had nothing to do with the Emilia Perez campaign. Like, she arranged it herself. And then that was another snafu of hers. So I don't really know what she thinks her endgame here is, but everything out of her mouth is just kind of making things worse.
Would you say that she's going rogue?
Is that Sarah Palin?
It's Sarah Palin.
Okay, yes. I remember, speaking of literature.
She's going Picaro.
Oh my God, when you called her a puta last week. I mean, Emilia Perez, not her. No.
I'm sure someone has this week.
It's awkward to comment on this also because we're not at the end of it.
No.
We don't know what's going to happen with her on this campaign.
We've got a month.
She was not in danger of winning this Oscar. I mean, I'll say that. Yes, you're right. The Oscars are still a month away. So maybe, and I'm curious, like, does Conan O'Brien address it at all? It's so strange. It's such a strange moment.
Honestly, though, this is Trump's America. And 2025 has been crazy. What if she won?
Oh, God. I mean, like, that. I mean, if that happened.
What if the racist contingent of the voting body was like, finally, a voice?
I mean, truly, that would mean I don't know the Academy at all. I mean, if there was any headway in her direction, especially since the rising tide against this movie is only rising even higher. So.
That's fair. I bet the Hollywood Foreign Press would have still voted for her, though.
Sure.
With the tweets that come out earlier.
Again, it only feels like we're going to discover more tweets in the future, so I don't even know why we began commenting on it now.
We'll discover a whole manifesto from her, probably, when she blows up the Oscars.
I'm going to say. Or we'll just read her book that'll come out in 6 months on some self-publishing website or something.
Yeah. All right. I think we've devoted enough time to our sister in arms. So, what are we talking about this week?
Well, luckily, we had a very rejuvenating award show on Sunday, the Grammys. And they kind of treated it like it was the last possible Grammys because everyone was there.
Yeah.
There was no musician left undiscovered. Of course, John Legend was there. You know, they keep him in a little cage under the Grammys. And then just like the door opens and he runs up there.
Yeah.
But everybody else was there too, and it was, as you know, Ira, a pretty exciting awards rollout. Actually, they did not make many bad decisions when it came to the actual awards. We'll get into that.
Mm-hmm. So we have that, and then we also have the fantastic Edward Norton here.
An intimidatingly talented and fabulous actor. I mean, somebody who is so talented, you can't pick a signature role for them. Like, every part of their career is packed with unbelievable moments. Like, we could talk just about American History X alone. Obviously, he is nominated now for playing Pete Seeger in A Complete Unknown. We'll talk about that. And that mysterious little man, Timothy Chalamet. Who is he? Does he still wear the Wonka hat?
You know he keep that thing on him.
He fucking the Wonka hat.
I need to know if Timothy pulled up in the Sri Lanka to set.
The Sri Wonka, yes.
All right, when we're back, more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Helix, Lewis's favorite mattress.
I have to tell you something. I am changing everything in my bedroom. I have decided to make everything jet black. And the only thing I am keeping is my Helix mattress, which is, as you know, the most decadent part of my life.
What sexy 90s thriller are you living in?
It really is. I want someone to fall through a coffee table after a cocaine binge kind of vibe. Morticia glam, if you will.
Helix's lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Luxe and Ultra Premium Elite collections, Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, Helix Kids mattresses designed for growing bodies, and it's endorsed by child sleep experts. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You have to take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress, but it only takes 2 minutes.
When I took the Helix Sleep Quiz, first of all, I was having the time of my life. I love when anyone asks me about my sleep and how I sleep and if I do it well, because honestly, the answer is yes. It doesn't feel like a talent, but I do it well enough that I'm going to claim it as one. Not sure you can take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It is even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. As I said, my sleep has never been better, and the only way I'm improving it is adding Jet Black to every segment of my life. So if I seem a little inky, just know that's a color scheme I picked out. Enjoy.
Go to helixsleep.com/keepit for 20% off site-wide, plus 2 free dream pillows with mattress purchase. That's helixsleep.com/keepit for 20% off site-wide, plus 2 free dream pillows with mattress purchase. HelixSleep.com/keepit.
Save big money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
The 67th Grammy Awards were held on Sunday, honoring the industry's biggest stars, LA's recovery efforts, and Trevor Noah doing his stand-up routine.
Just wandering between all those celebrities. It was given lounge act. I mean, he's determined to do the jokes while the celebrities are sitting right there. And I have to say, I'm going to call that brave and don't do it again.
Yeah, I will say that once again, Trevor Noah is just, he's on top of people. And I would find that uncomfortable if I were in the audience. In fact, I will say that many of them were visibly uncomfortable. Name Chapel Roan. Did you notice at one point when he's doing his opening monologue, the camera is just focused on her? And even when he shifts, they make sure that they get her in like the lower part of the corner of the camera. And it's just like, can we leave the bitch alone?
They're like, sure, she's going to snarl or something.
And you could tell that she was like aware that the cameras are just on her. And she's just making sure that she nods and, you know, she like, you know, cheers, you know, when she's supposed to. But that was stressful for me to watch.
No, I mean, it's stressful if you're watching any stand-up and then you can see any of the audience having to react knowing they're on camera. Just like for me, I find it stressful, period, to laugh, let alone consistently at someone doing anything. So it would appear that I was having a stony reaction to anything going on when truly I'm just listening. So I kind of feel bad for people being literally on camera while they're supposed to be reacting like clowns at whatever he's saying. But by the way, like his hosting style is so strange for the Grammys. Like he's very frenetic, but then not saying much. So it just felt like it felt like he was constantly saying that was amazing at everything. And you were supposed to be, it was very red carpet commentary from the 2000s.
Yeah. Wow. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Give it up for Beyonce, everyone. And I'm like, where are the jokes, baby?
Yeah.
I know you're funny. Maybe that girl from Selling Sunset really did write all his jokes.
That's right. I remember that claim. he had some joke about Colombia and Shakira, like she's the best export since, and the joke was something to do with crimes of some kind or cocaine. I don't know. It felt very first thought too. It felt like whoever was writing the jokes for this was not a pop culture person. Maybe just a longtime Daily Show writer. I have no idea. But like the voice was out of sync with what I wanted to hear at that award show.
Also, his joke about immigrants voting. Obviously, it was a joke about, you know, something that Trump would say, etc. But the joke didn't really land, and I think we all saw Doechii roll her eyes at that joke.
Mm. But honestly, it's a testament to the power of this ceremony that I thought it was such a success. And by the way, old school in a way where this was literally a four-hour award show. Like, people claim yes. award shows are 4 hours long. Like, this one gave you the full Gone with the Wind. We were there that long. But it was mostly fabulous. I mean, like, the Grammys have the kind of hardest obligation because they have to put so much in there. They have to get all of the new artists and then lots of legacy collaborations. And then, like, they have to talk about the foundation. And then this year they had to talk about Los Angeles. So there's just so much they had to get in there. But the awards rollout itself, I thought, was pretty rad. I don't know. I wasn't mad at almost anything, I don't think.
I will say what I'm mad at is Charli XCX, they trotted her out. She has so many nominations, and she won shit that was off camera.
Yes. I happened to be in my car early on Sunday, and I listened to the pre-show rollout of awards, which just goes on and on and on. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's tons and tons of categories. I heard somebody named Sierra Farrell, whose music I enjoy, win 4 Grammys in a row. It's like, wow, they just like, it's like Costco. You just like come away with awards and you're like, I'm barely here. But yes, Charli XCX won for dance recording for Von Dutch and 2 others.
Yeah, and she won Best Dance Electronic Album for Brat, which, by the way, has been won by 4 women.
Really?
Yes.
Dance, is that a Madonna, Ray of Light?
Confessions on a Dance Floor.
Oh, Confessions on a Dance Floor, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Gaga the Fame.
Mm.
And you know the other one. It's recent.
Oh, dance. It's not Kylie Minogue.
No. They televised this one.
Dance album. Who is it?
Beyonce. Renaissance.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. She does win Grammys sometimes. I don't know if people are aware of that.
But it's so upsetting that she was just sort of sitting there doing nothing all award show. And then she performs at the end too, which I guess they were like, got to keep these faggots watching.
That must have been why they did that. But it felt very weird that that was the last performance while you were between like Song of the Year and Album of the Year. I felt like that should have gotten everybody into the Grammys. They should have led with that because it was very a party atmosphere. And by the time the Grammys were over, we wanted to leave the party.
Yeah. And obviously there were some complaints from people that the ceremony wasn't really, you know, honoring LA and the firefighters. I think there was someone wrote an opinion piece that, you know, they sort of used the victims as props in a way, and it still was sort of celebrating the Grammys in a way. Like, it felt very weird to have all of this stuff at one point starting out the show in a very sort of somber way, and then you're ending it with Charli XCX doing guests, and then, by the way, here are the firefighters. It was a bit of whiplash.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, that is sort of the danger with the show. I mean, like, just tonally, it does have to be all over the place, as the music itself is all over the place. Like, these artists, there's no Venn diagram encompassing all of these things. But, like, looking at Record and Song of the Year, can I just say, we were stupid not to guess that Kendrick Lamar would win this. I feel like that was, like, a definitive track that came out in the summer.
I wasn't shocked at all.
Yeah.
I mean, people with me were like, this song won. And I was like, yeah, Espresso was not the song of the year for everyone.
And also, Espresso won the categories it should have won. Like, Sabrina Carpenter won 2 Grammys. That is the appropriate amount. She won, like, Pop Vocal Album. It's like how, like, Call Me Maybe didn't win Record of the Year, right? There should be an added element of, like, gravitas and heft to what I think wins Record of the Year ultimately. And by the way, that doesn't always happen. You know, Flowers is a lovely song. But even then, it's like you got kind of a richer, harder vocal on that song. I just think that Espresso is a great song, a very re-listenable song. But I think it lacks, you know, that extra thing, that thing that makes it great.
Well, the other thing is I knew that Kendrick Lamar was going to be walking away with an award because he was just one of the biggest things of this year. The Kendrick and Drake feud this past year was one of the biggest stories of pop culture, period.
Correct. Now, Best New Artist, Chappell Roan did win this. Chappell Roan didn't walk away with that much last night, which I think is a little bit surprising. But I just want to say, I have a friend in San Francisco named Ali who got in my face once and said, Sabrina Carpenter is going to win Best New Artist. And I said, this is clearly a Chappell Roan win. They love to give it to the upcoming singer-songwriter person who has their own point of view, who isn't contrived, who doesn't feel like the industry invented her. No offense to Sabrina Carpenter. I'm obsessed with that album. But I just want to say that he has been really motherfucking silent. I've not heard a fucking peep from him after I read him to filth. So,
okay, Jafar, coming for an Ali on the podcast. Shots are fired at your
friends.
Yes,
right. Abu leaps on my shoulder. Yes.
No, Chavo Roan seems like the perfect person to win this. And I loved her speech with her book.
And because let me tell you something. She prefers to be off book, if you know her commentary. And this time, she was like, let me write a little acrostic poem to put it all together. Yes, yeah. And she talked about how new artists in the industry get signed, and then they still don't have things like health insurance, and record companies sort of take advantage of their constant toiling without giving them health insurance. And so that was a pretty awesome perspective. And she also like looked dead to camera while she did it too. Like, this is really serious. I saw a tweet being like, this is why it's important not to have every celebrity be a Nepo baby, because they're just not going to get up on stage and talk about health insurance.
Right. And we need health insurance in the music industry, because if everybody's doing backflips like Benson Boone, some people are going to get hurt.
Also, he's doing backflips, excuse me, in that jumpsuit where I could see, I'm sorry, the veins in his balls. I mean, like, something's going to rip. It's going to be a Lenny Kravitz situation, if you remember that.
And I'd love to see it. He apologized for adjusting his junk on stage. And I said, you could have done it again.
Encore, you screamed.
I love Benson Boone so much on Instagram.
Yeah.
I would love for an album with more songs that I want to listen to.
Somebody unfortunately associated his songs with Imagine Dragons, and it just feels like Imagine Dragons as a genre is what this fits into, and it sort of defangs it as having any kind of raw male sexual power or whatever we're kind of associating with him at the moment. So I look forward to his future music.
Yeah. I will say, though, going back to Chapel, it was shocking that we had a lack of just sort of like political commentary or anyone with any other sort of bite in their speeches besides her.
Yeah, no, I do feel like the speeches were pretty quick. Maybe like there's a timer that was like intimidating people off stage or whatever, because even Beyonce, not that she's like a verbose person, I felt like she spoke for 2 seconds and then got the hell out of there. But that's another question I have. So Beyonce first won Best Country Album, which is, you know, is like a triumph and fabulous or whatever.
Yeah. Taylor got to give it to her.
Taylor Swift got to give it to her. I believe in the sanctity of all award shows. I don't think they're pulling the wool over any of our eyes or whatever. Bitch, you showed her the envelope. I absolutely know she was only going to be there if she went. You think she's going to be there and be like Kacey Musgraves? Absolutely yeah, not.
I mean, it's so funny watching the award shows and just trying to figure out what's going on with them. Who knew? And like, why are these people here? Because, yeah, the Taylor Swift handing it over to Beyonce moment is just too perfect. But then again, you remember when the Oscars tried to engineer a moment by keeping Best Actor to last?
Oh, for Chadwick Boseman. And then I have never seen an award show end like that. This is, I believe this is the Oscars we were talking about before, the Nomadland one.
Yeah.
Where the idea was that Chadwick Boseman, the late Chadwick Boseman, would win for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And he didn't. And Anthony Hopkins won for The Father. And he was not there. And they just said, we accept this award on his behalf. And then the Oscars were over. That is truly and I believe, wasn't Steven Soderbergh the director of that Oscars too? The flop of his career.
You know who was happy with that win, though? Carla Sofia Gascon.
She cheered. She said, I love the Oscars.
Otherwise, she would have written a Wakanda Korean festival.
Now, best pop duo group performance, Die With a Smile. Guys, are we sure? I know it's a huge hit, and I still kind of couldn't identify that melody if you gave me like $10,000. I just don't think it's like the peak of either of their careers. I'm talking about Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga.
Well, you mean if the party was over, then I want to be next. I love that song. I'm sorry.
You love
it? Yeah. It's platinum in my house.
Okay, well, it's platinum in general. So for once, your fantasies or your delusions are running into reality.
This is one of the weirdest songs to me, though, only because you keep having to remind people that it was like one of the biggest songs of last year.
No, people right now are talking about in the middle of the Grammys, Lady Gaga debuted a new music video, Abracadabra.
Thank fucking God.
And the tone around this conversation is, I hope this one charts. I hope this one gets her back on the chart. It's like, girl, she was number one last week with Die With a Smile.
Let's do a quick diversion, though, into Abracadabra, which debuted in the middle of the Grammys, sponsored by MasterCard. I believe they just paid for the ad space. But at first, I thought it was just going to be a commercial. And then the video kept going on. And yes. Then I was entranced and screaming.
Well, they at the beginning of the video, you see it says Lady Gaga Abracadabra in specialized spooky font. And it mm-hmm. looks like it's going to be a preview of a coming album or song or whatever. And then it just kept going. And everybody in the room I was watching in realized, oh, this is new and yet throwback Lady Gaga and yet also going very, very hard. It's sort of like if Bad Romance was one kind of monster stomp and then Judas sped it up. This is sort of the taking it to 11. Like it went even harder with the same kind of, you know, high fashion Suspiria costuming that we're familiar with from her.
It was a monster mash.
Yes, right here in February. As my friend Chris once tweeted, people think the monster mash is at Halloween. They never specify a specific date. It could be Easter.
I love this song.
Me too. I'm a big fan. Also, I love how it just has, like Bad Romance, different sections that are rawer and crazier, and then it goes back to like a really good melody. So it just has all the ingredients of classic Lady Gaga. Again, it's one of those things like her last single where I kind of knew she could do this, but I'm happy we're getting this kind of retread.
Also, that lady with the cane, I'm loving this narrative because this video set before Disease?
Oh, maybe. Oh, you think they're connected?
Well, when you watch the Disease video, which of course I did right after, you see the woman in black who is stalking Lady Gaga through the video, right? And she has the cane, but she has this like black sort of like leather thing. You can't really see her face. But when you look close at her, like in the car, you can see bits of red coming out from underneath her black. And so I'm thinking, has that woman in red who's been stalking her in the Abracadabra video, does she turn into that?
God, it is so exhausting what must go into the planning of, like, an era. Like,
yeah.
I'm picturing a whiteboard with note cards on it. Like, woman in black will be woman in red at this point. You know, just, like, red strings everywhere connecting everything.
When Madonna had a new era, she just put her pussy in a book.
Right. She's like, and I'm Asian this time.
That's it.
Yeah.
She went and got the chopsticks.
Yeah, right. No, she's like, kimono and patent leather? Who cares? I'll do it. No, it really is a fabulous video. And also, you get some really hard dancing from Lady Gaga. And I always forget that that's a serious part of what she does. She is a choreography queen. I think maybe we're always kind of comparing her to Beyonce or, you know, other people of that era who are, I don't even Janet or Madonna, people from that time who dancing is their primary thing. But really, she is an athletic dancer. And what goes on here is very memorable and just shocking and jarring, and even her facial expressions are like classically hilarious Gaga. So anytime she like rummages into funny again, I'm so happy because I always felt like that instinct was getting killed in her every single new decision she made in the 2010s.
Yeah. Now, Lewis, you know I thought of you immediately when Gaga, when she what during the ceremony?
Hold on. She spoke up for trans people. Did that remind you of me? Activist Lewis Vertel?
No, her performance with Bruno Mars.
Wait, what did she do?
She sang the Mamas and the Papas.
Oh, yes. Oh, which as you know, I was listening to them that day, like any rational human being. We still don't have a Mama Cass biopic. A.D. Bryant, pick up the phone. Anyway.
Bruno Mars, Mama Cass. I said, this is perfect Lewis and Ira Bate.
Yes, totally. Also, they sounded magnificent. I mean, yeah. The Mamas and the Papas are, you know, like ABBA or Carpenters, defined by the miraculous quality of their harmonies. And they really picked it. Like, Bruno Mars, we think of as a, you know, a talented vocalist on any pop track, but he really was, like, belting it and helping us lose the memory of John Phillips, which, if you've read Mackenzie Phillips's book, is a good thing.
I missed the show. So weird.
Oh, she was amazing on that show. She's also a big board game fan, Mackenzie Phillips. I ran into her at a game night once. That woman is obsessed with board games.
Wow. I thought that her getup was like pitch perfect. I love the beanie. I love, you know, the Woodstock-ish outfit. And I'm kind of like on board for whatever they're cooking up. I don't like, maybe it's just the one-off for the song, but I feel like I'm involved if she and Bruno want to keep doing shit.
Well, I mean, it does feel like she's looking for somebody to replace Tony what Bennett. Tony Bennett was to her, which is, you know, there is an element of, it's the crooner thing, it's the old school thing, but also really sing with me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like he does check all of those boxes, since he's one of these people that will just casually bounce into 100 genres and nobody will think twice about it. It won't seem contrived to people.
And he loves doing that shit anyway. I mean, Silk Sonic.
Right.
I still miss them. And also, it must be said, I fucking love his song with Sexy Red, Fat, Juicy, and Wet.
Also, isn't he the one who tweeted, like, I don't know what the occasion was, but he said something like, he had like a, not like 1 billion streams of something, or I don't know what, but he responded, thank you, maybe I'll be out of debt soon. So funny.
Cocaine costs a lot of money.
Yeah, right. And look, and being styled like Lena Horne costs a lot of money. Okay, that's the first half of our Grammys conversation. We will be right back in a second with the second half. We'll see who won Album of the Year. It's a new artist to me, never heard of her.
Keep It is brought to you by Built. If you pay rent and you haven't heard of Built, you're about to thank me. You probably already know of ways to earn points on groceries, travel, and practically everything else we buy. But with Built, you can earn points on rent, one of our biggest monthly expenses.
You don't even have to check with your landlord to start earning points that you can use towards flights, hotel stays, fitness classes, and even your next rent payment. Let me break it down for you. There's no cost to join Built, and as a member, you'll earn valuable points on rent and on your everyday spending. Built points can be transferred to your favorite hotels and airlines, and even the ones you haven't heard of. There are over 500 airlines and 700,000 hotels and properties around the world you can redeem your Built points toward. Points can also be redeemed towards a future rent payment and unique experiences that only Built members can access. So if you're not earning points on rent, my question is, why not?
I love that you don't have to check in with your landlord, because mine never responds to my texts anyway.
Oh, how very Norman Lear sitcom. It's giving Schneider from One Day at a Time.
I've always wanted a Mr. Roper, you know, just showing up unannounced, interfering with my life.
Bug-eyed and full of one-liners.
Start earning points on rent you're already paying by going to joinbuilt.com/keepit. That's joinbuilt.com/keepit. Make sure to use our URL so they know that we sent you. Joinbuilt.com/keepit to start earning points on your rent payments today. And we're back with our Grammys discussion. I want to shout out, by the way, this was not a award that aired, but one of the Espresso wins was the Mark Ronson FNZ Working yes. Late remix. And I fucking love that song.
That song takes off. Also, it's one of those, Espresso is a song that doesn't need to be remixed, right? Every time it comes on, it's quote unquote a vibe and you're just in it. This is a fabulous and a departure from that song that still has the kernel of what makes that song great in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so shout out to Mark Ronson. Always doing it.
What did we think of Doechii's performance? Because, by the way, I'm still reeling from her guest judging stint on RuPaul's Drag Race, where I think she is one of the best guest judges of all time.
Yeah, and the performance of Alter Ego was fantastic.
Oh, certainly.
Although, that Badonkadonk thing is a scam. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, oh, you think so? Oh, you mean on RuPaul's Drag Race?
On RuPaul's Drag Race, I think it was a scam.
Oh, but there's standards and practices, though. You think they can get away with that?
You think Ru cares about standards?
Well, it's like quiz show. They can do it if everybody signs on and says, okay, it can be rigged in this person's favor or whatever, you know?
That's fair. But back to Doechii, she is just phenomenal. And her performance of Catfish and Denial is a River, first of all, those songs are at the top of my on repeat playlist on Spotify. I love that album. And she won Best Rap Album, and she is only the third woman to do so, by the way. You know, the other two were Krayshawn and Madonna.
It was actually Lauryn Hill and Cardi B, and which is crazy because it's like you're telling me Missy Elliott never won that. Though I guess all her albums really came out in the heat of like Eminem, Dr. Dre, those people too. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a lot of competition. But Under Construction, come on, that should be in that category.
Yeah, it's kind of disgraceful, but I loved Cardi B getting to present the award to Doechii. So imagine she had to present it to Eminem.
Tough, right? By the way, I didn't realize his new thing is called The Death of Slim Shady or something. Can we not? I just don't want to hear about it.
I thought you wanted Slim Shady dead.
Yes, but like on someone else's time.
But ever since I've seen her perform at Coachella, and then I saw her perform at the Paper Magazine party last year, she's just so energetic on stage and fun in the way that Janelle Monáe sort of used to really be for me. Mm-hmm. I still enjoy Janelle Monáe, but I remember when Janelle Monáe first started out, you know, sort of as Prince's protege. In the sense of, like, remember when she performed at the Forum.
Yes, right.
Opening for him. I just love watching Doechii on stage, and I love that people got to see that live.
Well, also, let's talk about Janelle Monáe, who performed the Quincy Jones tribute, which had two parts that were especially amazing to me. First of all, you had Cynthia Erivo doing Fly Me to the Moon, which you forget that she is this, like, or I guess you don't forget, but sharpshooter vocalist.
She's been awaing all over the place, though. Yeah. So
right. But, like, we're aware that she has belting capabilities, but, like, this kind of Frank Sinatra quality of hers that she displayed was very novel to me. And she just, like, was extremely captivating right away. Nobody has had a better year than Cynthia Erivo. Like, the fact that she is now on her third Oscar nomination for this unbelievably popular movie, I feel like her popularity, just as a name, has risen hyperbolically over the past few months. I was watching an episode of Pop Culture Jeopardy, which was taped during the summer, and somebody buzzed in on a clue where she was the response, and they said Cynthia Erivo, like that. Like, they didn't know how to say her name. That would never happen now.
Yeah, she's really become, like, the moment this year. I think that Wicked is just such the kind of film that we've been missing. By the way, I'm always going to commend Wicked, to be honest, because I feel like we've been missing star-making turns in Hollywood for a minute. And this is something that took a really well-regarded actress. She'd already been an Oscar nominee, but she wasn't sort of a household name. And Wicked has turned her into that.
Totally. No, it's like a completely different level of stardom. But then another part of the Quincy Jones tribute, you had Janelle Monáe doing Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. Now, this is one of those things that could have been really awkward because, of course, something about her dancing does call to mind Michael Jackson, like the jaggedness of the moves, like the black and white uniform. But I thought she really, while performing the song, kept all of the moves her own thing while only lightly referencing Michael Jackson. And she did literally do the moonwalk. So I'm not saying she didn't go there, but she did. Mm-hmm. And I thought she kept it cool. It didn't feel awkward to me, even though there's no getting around a Quincy Jones tribute that doesn't have Michael Jackson in it.
Yeah, I know. The hair threw me off, though. I will say that.
Yes, very unfamiliar look for her.
Yeah.
Did you see her performing afterwards where she did a moment of Nelly's Hot in Here? And then
she said, fuck you, Nelly?
Yes.
For performing at Trump's inauguration.
She was getting hot in here, but in a different way. Yes.
Yeah. Whew. Hot.
She had no dilemma. She said, I'm just going to fight Nelly.
She was flapping those wings all over the place.
Yes. She got down and shook her tail feather in his face. Yes.
I felt a lot of sweat in my suit after that. That's the end of our Nelly puns.
You're going to say, I don't think I have any other references there.
I mean, I could tilt my head back and cackle at a few more, but...
Right. And I'll laugh over and over again if we keep going this route.
Should we just get to the biggest award of the evening?
Which, by the way, you know what? Over the years, we've been wanting the Beyoncé album of the year win. She's like our definitive album artist. Beyonce is never going to come out with something and not attach to it a fully realized album. This is just mm-hmm. a part and parcel of who she is as an artist. I feel like people are kind of like, oh, this is a Al Pacino incentive of a woman win. You know, like they wanted to give it to her for something. This isn't her best album, whatever. This is a very cool album.
Yeah.
Nothing about this is an underqualified win. And, you know, it has lots of flavors, goes all over the place. And it has the thing the Grammys love, which I'm always railing about, which is it's the new thing that has a lot of the old thing in it. You know, you're not leaving behind any old Grammy voters. You know, they're like, oh, she's going to perform Blackbird. Oh, she did Jolene. Oh, but then, oh, you know, there's that slap funk of Chaka Khan is in Desert Eagle, for example. But then the songs that are all new are completely novel, and you wouldn't get them from any other artist. I'm sorry, Bodyguard is coming from nobody but Beyonce.
Yeah, I mean, I really love this win only because I think this album is exactly what you want from a legacy artist like Beyonce. You know, she has given us Renaissance, which is my favorite of hers. You know, it's an opus, you know, but she has B-Day, she has Lemonade, she has Self-Titled, she has so many different big albums. And I think the fact that she was like, I want to like play around in country and Americana and folk and whatever and do that for Cowboy Carter. More artists should be doing that, to be honest. Yeah. And I love that she just keeps going on about how genres are limiting to people. You know, she said it again in her speech because I don't want everyone trying to win awards by just doing what they do best each time, you know? Make something weird and make something fun. And I enjoy the fuck out of Cowboy Carter. And I think that that is exactly the kind of album that from an artist that you love from the past, right? Like a Donna Summer or like a Diana Ross or whatever. You are at the record store. You're flipping through vinyls. You're familiar with the big singles. You're familiar with, you know, the most popular albums. You find Cowboy Carter amongst like the vinyls there and you go home and listen to it and you're like, man, this is a really fucking cool album.
Right. And unexpected. You know, it's like Bob Dylan with like Nashville Skyline or something. Like people do these departures or like whatever. Paul Simon with Graceland or whatever, which became like his definitive album. You know, it's cool to recognize that she made this artistic leap. And by the way, it was like a critical success too. I think it has like a 91 on Metacritic or something.
You know what it is? It is not her scent of a woman because that, the hoo-ahs in that movie. No, I would say this is her Denzel Washington in Training Day.
Yes, right. Yes, unexpected and coming at a point when we're very familiar with her as an artist.
And
yes.
Probably he should have won for Malcolm X, but he didn't. And so he is winning for this. But also, it's a great fucking performance. And if you revisit Training Day, he deserved that Oscar.
Precisely. Okay, that's extremely fair. I also like her winning this year, though, because it was a competitive album year. It could have been five different ones. So it's not just like we're giving it to Beyonce because we're out of ideas at the moment. There are lots of things that could have contended. I maintain that Brat, which is probably the best known album title of the year and, you know, color scheme, I just can't picture the old Grammy voters sitting down with this album and vibing with it. I say that appreciatively of this because the album is for 31-year-olds who are so annoying. And you guys are all my friends, and I love you and need you. But I think in terms of how much library of music Beyonce brought to Cowboy Carter, it was likelier to go her direction.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and Short and Sweet, of course, I listened to a million times. And also, who is Jacob Collier, and why does he get into Album of the Year?
There's always someone.
Yeah, just like Andre 3000 with his, like, what is it, like a flute medley or something?
Yeah, you know, he's a flautist.
I thought Lizzo was the only legal flautist we had, and now there's two, and I'm confused. I don't think Jethro Tull performs anymore.
That's actually what the lawsuit was about.
there can only be one flautist.
To wrap up, like, I loved Sabrina Carpenter's performance as well. The Goldie Hawn reference to her 1978 TV special was so funny.
She descends these stairs, and it looks like she's going to go all the way down, you know, classic sort of Busby Berkeley entrance. And then there's a schism between a couple of the stairs, and she just descends into the floor. It's very funny. Yeah. Very Miss Piggy.
Yeah. And I will say that there's video of Beyonce hugging Sabrina after she wins. And Sabrina congratulates her. And Beyonce is like, I love you. And she calls her a breath of fresh air.
I can't get over that gif of Beyonce winning Best Country Album, though. She's sitting like, there could be no other comparison. Genghis Khan. She is sitting with her arms out as if to say, I run the Grammys, and they're all, you know.
Well, they are part of the world.
Yes, right.
And she, who run?
Girls. See? Beyonce's vibe, I have never seen her like this ever. She was like befuddled by everything. It kind of felt like she was sat down in her seat like halfway through the ceremony, as, you know, of course. But it felt like something else was maybe on her mind. And then when the awards happened to her, she kind of like sprang into form and realized this was very emotional and had to kind of change where her brain space was at entirely. And then by the time she won Album of the Year, she was just like, it was so surreal for her, she could barely comment on it. She had to like leave the stage immediately.
Yeah, I think people were commenting that it was like fake shock. But I really think that her mind was elsewhere, as you said. But then also, I don't think she would have been shocked for the Grammys to play in her face again.
That's all they do. Excuse me. Yeah.
So,
when people show you who they are, believe them. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Oprah.
Maya Angelou, but yes.
Also, I want to give a special shout out to the fire chief who presented the award to Beyonce at the end. At first, I was a little mad that they were trotting out the firefighters at the end because we could have mentioned something about, you know, the incarcerated people who also helped stop the fires in Los Angeles. But I thought it was a nice way to sort of tribute the firefighters. And the woman who read the award that Beyonce won, I knew that Beyonce had won the minute she opened the envelope, because that woman, I could tell she was beehive.
Yo, she reacted like a stan.
She opened that in her face. She was like, she stumbled. Someone was like, oh, I wish, you know, she hadn't stumbled over her words. I said, no, bitch, she stumbled over her words because she was like, oh my God, Beyonce. And Beyonce is about to come on stage and I am about to give her a hug.
Yes, right. No, she knew the gravity of the moment, which is not a guarantee when you're, you know, if these could be non-music fans, I don't know. But you could tell her reading it, it was an exciting moment for her and a stumble that was very endearing.
Yeah. So I love that moment. Just a fun ceremony, to be honest.
I enjoyed it top to bottom. I ate way too much, which when I enjoy an award show, I'm like Templeton and Charlotte's Web. I'm like, I'm pulling all the foods. Keep It is brought to you by Factor. Now, talk about mainstays in my life. Guys, I'm eating Factor every day. They are protein-packed meals, and as you know, I'm one of the proteiniest people you'll ever meet. Ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. The dishes are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in 2 minutes. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. I'm the most active and the most busy. Everyone knows that about me. I'm Busy Phillips.
I don't know how she does it.
She has a daughter named Cricket. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. If you're a snacker, Factor also offers smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go bites, and more add-ons.
I actually use Factor, too, and that's because I'm a New Yorker. And as you know, we're always on the go.
Ugh, even you. I'm a big fan of the honey mustard chicken meal. I often get 7-8 of them a week. I get the full 18 meal count. My fridge is full of them. It looks like I'm hoarding them for some sort of apocalyptic moment.
And you thought eating Factor was only for the number munchers.
Oh my God. Thank you for taking me back. I believe I was bad at that game. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/keepit50off and use code keepit50off to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code KEEPIT50OFF at factormeals.com/keepit50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
This week's guest is a four-time Oscar nominee who has delivered one phenomenal performance after another for decades. From Primal Fear to Fight Club to Birdman to Glass Onion, he has left an indelible mark on the art form, and his latest role as Pete Seeger in A Complete Unknown has only added to that legacy. Please welcome to Keep It, Edward Norton.
Hey, guys.
Oh, man. Not only am I thrilled you are here, you are one of the few actors I can think of who is truly intimidating. In terms of what you bring to the silver screen, I'm always surprised by what you bring and what you are interested in. Are you surprised to have had as varied a career as you have? It feels like you're willing to do anything, and the level of quality with which you do it is so staggering.
Oh, that's nice. I think that it's funny, the whole idea of career, you know, and body of work, because I think it's a lens that people tend to bring from the outside, right? I suppose there are people who can shape, you know, a career, like, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, but like sort of the Tom Cruise modality, right? You can say like, I'm going to make the biggest types of films, I'm going to do the thing. But I've never really related to that, but I also, it's just not the way I find the ebbs and flows of inspiration work for me. I can't explain why a thing gets under my skin, you know, and becomes like, you know, summons in me the motivation or the inspiration or the, you know, the mojo, if you want to call it that, to go at something with focus and passion, if you want to call it that. But I don't tend to interrelate them, if that makes any sense. I don't tend to cross connect the, you know, the decision to do American History X with the decision to do Death to Smoochie. You know, it's not like, oh, it'd be fun to do a comedy or it'd be fun to do a thing. I just sort of have to, I end up looking back mostly because other people will bring an external lens on it and sometimes find connectivity that I didn't even really intend or I think it's interesting. I once went to a film festival in China and I saw they were running a series of films in Shanghai that I did and I saw that there was this like run of characters in Chinese and then my name. And I said to the trainer, I said, what does that mean? She said, oh, that's the theme of your film series. And I said, oh, what's the theme? And she said, it's the search for the spiritual center in the new youth generation, the films of,
oh.
And I said, wow, like that's cool. The search for the spiritual center in the new youth generation. And I don't, you know, I kind of love watching the way other people apply a skew or an interpretation or something to the stuff I've done. But I like the variety. I mean, I think it's not, again, it's not something I said, I want to go out and be diverse. It's more when I look at things over time, my own interests shift or the, you know, it's not an intellectual process, you know, it's something I've sort of stumbled my way through or followed my own line. I mean, it's, I'm not equating myself with Bob Dylan, but I will say that one of the things I've always admired enormously about Dylan, and I think the movie that we did sort of captures, is the idea of just sort of following the line of your interests, that integrity to your own sense of what you want to do in the moment, not in a careerist sense, but in the moment, is sometimes what ends up producing the most vital or connected work. I don't know.
It's been such a pleasure listening to you talk about this movie, A Complete Unknown, especially since when you talk about Timothée Chalamet, you seem, every once in a while, an actor seems so kind of wowed by another. We had Cate Blanchett here once, and she was talking about Diane Wiest and just trying to get to the heart of what it is Diane Wiest does on screen. It was like a pleasure listening to her figure it out. And you called Timothée Chalamet a subset of one. Like, he's the only person who could have done this performance of Bob Dylan. And I was wondering, if you could get into that, what is it he brings to it that is, you know, kind of goes beyond the expectation of a Bob Dylan performance?
You know, I think I've always felt that actors have more or less plasticity And I don't mean by that talent. I think there's some there's great actors who are extremely plastic. They have an incredible ability to stretch and change and morph and kind of you lose an essential sense of them. And then there's other actors who are really excellent actors who are maybe not as they stay within a kind of an iconic frame of some sort. And I think both are super interesting. I think we have actors who are very iconic, and then we have those who are more like shapeshifters. And I actually think the same is true of roles. I think there are certain roles that have a lot of ways you could interpret them. You could see many different Macbeth, right? You can there have been and there will be many more great interpretations of Macbeth or Hamlet or. And then there are roles that I don't think have a huge amount of plasticity, and Bob Dylan is probably one of them. Like, you know, he's an extremely, extremely specific person. His voice was very specific. He looked a very specific way. And so I think, you know, the role of Dylan, playing young Bob Dylan, I don't think there's that many people who have the combination of the physical DNA and the talent to achieve the kind of bravura act of letting a world that knows a lot about this person and who's been made iconic through photographs and films and documentaries and all this stuff actually suspend disbelief and feel that they're immersed with that person. And I thought he achieved that. You know, I don't get that feeling that often. I sort of felt that way about Abraham Lincoln and Daniel Day-Lewis. I sort of felt that is a role of a figure that found the person that is best equipped to take on the monumental challenge of representing that figure, you know? And I feel that way about Timothy and Dylan. I think he really had a singular kind of capacity to get down in him at that age of his life. And I think the right actor lined up with this very, very challenging and specific role. And it's exciting when that happens.
And how did you feel conversely, I guess, representing Seeger in this film? You rarely play characters too who are real people with things to draw upon.
Yeah, I haven't. Let's see. Have I done that much? You're right.
There's Frida. I believe you played Nelson Rockefeller.
I did Nelson Rockefeller a little bit. And Alan Isaacman in The People versus Larry Flint, Larry Flint's lawyer, was a real person who I did get to meet. Although we distilled a number of people who worked with Larry into that character, but I did get to meet Alan Isaacman, who was very young when he argued that case in the Supreme Court. And that was really interesting. Pete Seeger obviously didn't get to meet. I was lucky and had access to conversations with Joan Baez and Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary and Bruce Springsteen and many others who knew him well, and even his daughters. And then there's a treasure trove of film and recording of Pete not only performing, but even being interviewed right after his, trial for contempt of Congress and all these things. Let's see. That's an interesting question. I mean, Pete Seeger himself is very specific. He has a very specific body posture and his hair and his teeth and his look and his aspect and his voice. He spoke in an extremely, it sounded like to me like a man out of another time. He had an almost Jesuit kind of a quality, a preacherly formality to the way he spoke. And I think that Timothy and Monica and I all had a similar challenge, which is you can get very hung up in the Wikipedia of a person, and you can get very hung up in the nuanced detail of exactly what happened and how they spoke and how they sang a thing. And it can become a trap in a way, because imitation, impersonation, and representation of a thing is important. But then you've also got to get down into kind of what's more universal about the interactions between these people. And I think Jim Mangold, our director, had a very, very adept and astute kind of he was like a good therapist. He really gave us all the freedom to spend the time getting deeply familiar with the physical reality of the people, but then to also release ourselves from the burden of documentary or of history or of whatever, and get down into the essential truths of relationships, you know, like, and I love the way Jim put it. He sort of said, you know, what's interesting in this scene is not that it's Bob Dylan and Joan Baez. It's that you can be falling in love with a person at the same moment that you feel competitive with them, you know, and that's what makes the scene interesting. Or you can, you know, from Bob to Pete, you can deeply revere and love and admire a person, and you can still want to break away from them and go your own way, you know. And those paradoxes, those things are what make the relationships have emotional stakes. And I think we all needed Jim to kind of give us the freedom to get away from impersonation. But it's a tricky thing, especially when there's enormous respect in the world for those people, you know?
Just as you had said that there are two types of actors, some that are more have more plasticity than others, I feel like there are two different types of actors in that I feel like I'm getting to know certain actors as I watch them on screen, and then other people, I feel like I'm learning nothing about the actual person behind the role. Like, it's all technique or, you know, it's not as revealing. Like, if I watch Jane Fonda in a movie, I feel like I'm getting some Jane Fonda from real life, whether she's playing Lillian Hellman or Clute or whatever. You, I think, are the opposite, where I feel like your roles are so varied, I can't look to almost any of them and think, oh, that was Edward Norton. And I was wondering if at all Birdman gave you even a moment to express something about the profession of acting that you otherwise wouldn't have been able to express as an actor.
it's a funny question. The answer to that one is yes and no. Mike Shiner is, for me, there was a very specific person who was the inspiration for Mike Shiner. Once I locked in on which actor that I grew up loving and knowing was tempestuous and problematic and difficult and all these things, once I had it, I couldn't get off of it. In my mind, I know exactly who Mike Shiner is channeling. But inevitably, as you say, because I am an actor and because I come from a theater background and things like that, there were things that, you know, Alejandro was so wonderful on that film in terms of saying, hey, look, there's a script and I want to follow it. But, you know, he said, you came up in New York theater, and if there's things that, and he gave me an amount of rope to lay things in that I feel and that I've heard people say, not always my own statements, but there's a part where Mike said, where Michael Keaton's character is getting really uptight about what went on in the rehearsal, in the preview. And Shiner says, you know, are you getting your panties in your twist about previews? That's for the people who are dumb enough to pay to watch us rehearse, you know. And it was a line I kind of came up with because I remembered someone saying it to me once. And I loved getting to put into it things that I know or have experienced or remember. But going back to your original question, the answer is kind of no. Like, Shiner's a lot more miserable than I am.
Oh, that's good.
he's pretty miserable. He's pretty... I think he's a lot of ego wrapped in insecurity, and I would say a self-imposed misery. I don't think I'm as tortured as Mike.
Would you say there is a role that you felt that you most connected with the most in your career?
You know, it's a funny thing because I believe that most of the choices I've made have been driven by the fact that something in the piece spoke to me in that moment. And so there's something of me in them because because there was something about the piece in the moment that expressed something that I was particularly interested in, and my interests have changed, you know. And in fact, I'll give you an interesting, it's a weird way to answer the question, but recently someone that I think is a wonderful writer who I've worked with before and want to work with again and everything sent me a piece that he wrote that is really well written, really good. And I knew I just didn't have it in me. You know, I knew it intellectually, it was a very excellent piece of writing and a terrific role. And I knew I couldn't connect and I didn't have the edge. I didn't feel in my bones that I could connect with the frequency that it was requiring, you know? And sometimes that's just, by contrast, Pete Seeger, I can't explain it. When Jim even suggested it to me, I kind of teared up. I felt this emotional pulse come up through me at the idea of representing his fundamental decency and goodness, and the idea of channeling Pete Seeger's energy gave me a wave of joy in a way. I can't explain it. I knew it was something I wanted to tap into. And maybe I was feeling something that I think people are feeling watching the film. Some people have written me and said that they just started weeping at times, not because of an event in the film, but because of the depiction of the values and the goodness and the conviction that these people had. And I felt that too. And I do think, in some ways, I think Pete Seeger, through the film, me channeling him, is communicating something to people that maybe they need right now. I think a lot of people feel raw for different reasons, and I think the portrait of someone who lived his life in service in that way is touching people in this particular moment and that's how I felt before I even read a line of it. And so it was right for me in this moment, I felt Pete Seeger's energy was something I wanted to, it was a vein I wanted to tap into.
I love that. I want to just lastly, as we let go of you then, ask, you've talked a lot about Spike Lee being very important to you and Do the Right Thing, how it was sort of inspirational for you. Is that sort of something that you also felt getting to work with him on The 25th Hour?
Very, very profoundly. And the late, you know, Phil Hoffman, who I loved and respected so much, was also a big fan of Spike's. We had this moment early on. Spike conducts rigorous rehearsal. I think we had a 5 or 6 week rehearsal period on that film, which is so unusual. Spike working with us like the Actors Studio or something. It was really intensive rehearsal work, and because he was going to shoot the film really fast. And at one point we were driving back into the city, and Phil kind of gave me this, he looked at me and I was looking in the rearview mirror, and I looked back and he just goes, heaven. He just went, heaven, you know? And I felt that way because I feel that Spike is, he had a profound impact on me. His films changed what I realized you could do with film. Do the Right Thing was it was beyond seminal to so many of us. It was like you could peel the skin back on American life in a form that was so explosive and defied all elements of plot and camera moves. And it was as a cinematic act, it was so vital. As a social piece of commentary, it was so vital. And then it also didn't give you the answers in the end. It you know, has the quote from Malcolm and the quote from Martin Luther King. They're diametrically opposed. And it basically said, you have to think through what this all means and what's right. And it was so electrifying to so many of us that summer. And I feel that way about many of his films. I feel that He Got Game is a masterpiece. I feel that Crooklyn is a masterpiece. I feel that, Malcolm X is a titanic, you know, monumental piece of work. And I desperately dreamed of working with Spike. And I felt on that one, what was beautiful about it was that Spike was in a very deep emotional place post 9/11. he wanted to tap into the mood of the city in that moment and capture it without commentary on the event specifically. He found a way to channel his feeling of melancholy into a story that became like this, almost like this analog for what was going on in the city. And I felt, you know, it was creative. Phil was right. It was heaven. It was like it was a very deep, deeply satisfying creative experience to work with him and work on something that was tapping into the zeitgeist of the city we all lived in.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. And I just want to say, we only briefly mentioned Primal Fear, but I want to say that your performance in that is, I think, the last great Agatha Christie-style performance. And I want the filmmakers of the world to bring me more Agatha Christie-style performances. I'm missing the, like, Marlena Dietrich in Witness for the Prosecution type, what is going on with this character roles in a courtroom, that I so long for this. So thank you for being the last great example of that.
I've been doing this a long time, and I've never been compared to Marlena Dietrich. So you, yeah. like you know, things. And by the way, I'm going to say, I love that you're wearing Marianne Jean-Baptiste on your shirt. Oh. That is amazing. She is amazing. And let's shout Mike Lee too, because I'm just going to add a little thing. Mike Lee, who is a legend and did so many great films, and she's so great in that film. But but also Mike's lifelong cinematographer, Dick Pope, one of the great DPs ever, mm-hmm. who shot Motherless Brooklyn for me. And who I shot The Illusionist with past this year, and that film was, I think, his last film with Mike. And it's for those listening who have not taken a deep dive into the work of Mike and that crew of people, it's such rich stuff. It's great stuff.
And you can start anywhere too. It could be Topsy Turvy or Secrets and Lies, or you can go up, down, about Peterloo. Like, all of the films are so wonderful.
Yeah. Vera Drake is one I love, and they're so great. Naked, and on and on and on. He's thing, and she is just so great.
Oh yes, she's wonderful. Also, Vera Drake, one of the rare screenplay Oscar nominations where there was no screenplay. He had to write it down afterwards so that people could read it. I love that story. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here, Edward. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, guys.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you. All right. When we're back, keep it. There is a ton of rage bait in the news right now, meant to distract and overwhelm us. But today, we'd like to focus on something positive, the work being done to fight back and what you can do to help.
This month, Vote Save America is making donations as part of their anxiety relief program to Black-led organizations and candidates of color, helping us gain ground at the state and local level. Like Janelle Bynum, Oregon's first Black Congress member who just won her district by less than 12,000 votes in 2024 and is in a must-win re-election bid that could determine whether Democrats take back the House.
You can set up a recurring donation at any amount that feels right for you, and Vote Save America will use it to build progressive power in 2025 and beyond. So go to votesaveamerica.com/donate to donate now.
Paid for by Vote Save America, votesaveamerica.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It. I gotta go. I gotta discuss this breaking news that hit me yesterday and shook me, to be honest.
You're like running into the newsroom, like Joan Cusack broadcast news. A VHS in your hand.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is potentially getting a reboot directed by Chloe Zhao.
Could I bring up Nomadland one more fucking time this episode? Jesus Christ, Chloe Zhao is in the news. I loved Nomadland. I loved it. And I loved the writer, which you didn't love, but I loved the writer.
I enjoyed it. I really did. I think that after Nomadland, when I watched the writer, I was expecting something a bit more grand, and it was really just sort of a small character piece. But revisiting it, I enjoyed it.
But so is this how are you going to turn this into a keep it? I look forward to you spinning your words into a way where this possibly could be a negative situation for you.
Well, Sarah Michelle Gellar is on board as well to come back. My keep it is to the fact that my phone is not ringing off the hook from my agent that I've been hired on this show.
Yeah, what's happening there?
What's going on, okay?
Well, they're too busy calling Stacey Abrams to do that job, Ira, so you'll just have to wait in line. But of course, she is hosting Assembly Required here at Crooked Media, so maybe she'll pass it up. Get in line, bitch.
This is my pop culture Jeopardy.
You are correct. Yes.
You know, this is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There is an essay on Buffy the Vampire Slayer in this book.
Which brings me to my keep it, which is, can you believe I have to read Ira's book in 2 days before I host with him a live Keep It extra episode, which will be in Boston this weekend. People are always telling me, Lewis, you have to go to Boston around Valentine's Day when it is simply bone-chilling. You must go there. Well, I'm going to be there with Ira. We'll be talking a lot about, first of all, his book. But a big part of the book is the 2000s. And so a big part of the show will be about the 2000s. That's all I'll say about that. And I don't remember the last book I read. My name is Barbara. You know what I'm saying? Which, by the way, oh, that's another keep it. My actual keep it this week is that Barbara Streisand did not win the audiobook Grammy for My Name is Barbara, which, as you know, she painstakingly read for over 775 hours. The winner went to that tone-deaf hack bitch, Jimmy Carter. Honey, I do not want to hear the record. I do not want to hear you on show tunes. That is not Fanny Bryce to me.
Didn't know he did audiobooks. Thought he built houses or whatever.
Yeah, no. This Habitat for Humanity, I have a match and it's coming down. I do not need to hear him talk for that long. Barbara nailed it with that audiobook, the definitive audiobook of our generation. I can't believe she didn't win.
Okay.
I'm checking this Wikipedia, though. She does have some Grammys. She does have some Grammys.
That would be meaning of Mariah, by the way.
Yes. Oh, that too. Mariah is a very special situation also. Yes. Yeah. And we're still mad at Cher that she didn't read the entire thing. I don't care if she has, quote unquote, dyslexia.
What's more important is that I've decided I will be campaigning for audiobook at the Grammys next year.
Oh, my God. That's hard because you're usually up against a former president.
Yeah.
You know, like a very, very accomplished musician. And as you know, your whole thing professionally is that you have fun t-shirts. So I'm trying to figure out how you're going to fit in there.
Yeah. Listen, I just need the nomination. I don't need to win the Grammy.
I know the feeling. When I got the Emmy nomination, I'm like, you can't take that away from me.
Yeah.
And by the way, Pop Culture Jeopardy, did you know this? For Best Game Show, the writers get nominated too.
Okay.
So I'm going to be a double nominee. And then yeah. I won't be just a single nominee like these scrubs, like, you know, our friend Mandy Moore or whatever. I get to be in the double nominee category.
Now, what if you lose to The Floor?
Which
I'm on.
You are on the new season of The Floor, which is coming up. I've had to keep this secret for months. There's previews now, so we can say that.
It comes out on Sunday after the Super Bowl.
I cannot, which is crazy. So you might be on the post-Super Bowl viewing.
Yeah. I'm like Jennifer Garner in that Alias episode where she was wearing the lingerie.
Right. Or the premiere of The Wonder Years or plenty of other things that have premiered after the Super Bowl. I cannot wait to watch it and see what Rob Lowe has to say about your whole thing.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's just like more than a feeling, you know?
Do not take this back to Boston. Speaking of Joan Baez, please come to Boston. Lovely song. Yeah.
But listen, I can't wait till our show on Friday. It's going to be smoking. I know two Boston songs.
Oh, okay. Got it. I was going to say, is that a Boston? I didn't even know that one. All right.
You thought I was making a Mask reference.
Yeah. Very confusing. Very confusing. Anyway, if you're coming to the Boston show, can't wait to see you. We'll be there after the show also. And I'll be there throwing copies of Ira's book at the crowd, you know, from a big t-shirt gun. It might be violent.
That just made me think of Julia Louis-Dreyfus getting hit with a book in Arrested Development. All right.
We will see you next week.
Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review or leaving comments on the YouTube page.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Fortell, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski.
This episode was recorded and mixed by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Thank you to Matt DeGroot, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America, EAST. And as always, keep it as filmed in front of a live studio audience.